Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. Cynthia Pooler. And my guest today has come on once before. She's a professor at the College of St. Rose, and she's going to talk about the latest developments on the budget cuts and the firings. So, Angela, has a lot happened since we last talked?
I do think that some fairly significant things have developed since we last spoke. When we spoke last time, we were just a couple of weeks out from the December 11th announcement by the Board of Trustees and the President that they would eliminate 28 programs on campus and terminate 23 tenured and tenure-track faculty. Since that announcement was made, we've had and we've had some great press coverage here. So some of many of your listeners have probably seen some of the things that have happened. We've had some demonstrations. We had a funeral procession through campus to mourn the loss of our colleagues and mourn the loss of some really important programs. I mean, some of the programs that were eliminated were things like philosophy and religious studies. They're both in the house in the same department. That department, in many ways, is so deeply connected to the mission of the college, and it's really sort of shocking that that was one of the programs that was eliminated. You'll also hear the administration talk about that they eliminated these programs because they were low growth or no growth programs, and we have yet to see any evidence that these are low-growth or no-growth programs. In fact, sociology is one of the majors that was eliminated. Sociology is actually, across the nation, a growth program. It's clearly a growth program in the capital region. So we're sort of not buying this low-growth, no-growth issue. They've got majors in their programs. They've got some really talented faculty, some of whom have been terminated in that program. It's a really important discipline. It's a sort of sister discipline to my own in political science. In political science, our master's degree was terminated, but we also lost two of our colleagues, one in history and one in political science. Both of those majors, particularly political science, are growth areas. Environmental science. I mean, there's geology. We've got these really major programs that are important to the future of our societies, that they're important for students to have training in these areas. They are certainly growth programs if they're adequately marketed. And so that's been a big frustration. So we had this demonstration. We had a lot of turnout. We got a lot of really great press coverage over that. But the biggest news since we last talked was that the faculty took a no-confidence vote in President Carolyn Stefanko. That no-confidence vote passed overwhelmingly, 120-35, with 3 abstentions. And a couple of days after the full faculty took that vote, 2 days later, the Board of Trustees met, and they voted unanimously a statement of confidence in the president, and say that they continue to, and the president says she's going to continue with the full faith of the board to carry out the job that she was instructed to do by the board. So we were very disappointed in this response. A no-confidence vote is largely symbolic, but it also provides some leverage for trying to get back at the negotiating table and start to make some of the decisions about the intellectual reputation of the institution. And that's really what our charge is as faculty, is to be in charge of that curriculum and the academic mission of the institution. So we were disappointed to hear that from the president and disappointed to hear that from the board. It seems that they're going to continue on this path to ignore what the faculty is saying. So that's been a disappointment, but the no confidence vote by the faculty, this overwhelming vote, I think speaks volumes about where we've come to in this process. They'll continue to say that they've invited us to the table. If they had, we wouldn't have had that much support for the no-confidence vote, and we wouldn't still be kind of raising a ruckus.
So the faculty is kind of left out in the cold. Would you say that was correct?
Yeah, one of the things, and I always appreciate that you have invited us on to talk about what's happening on campus, because it's a great venue for actually talking about some of the complexities that exist without speaking in terms of just sound bites, which are never very revealing.
Right.
The way that decision-making happens in institutions of higher education is oftentimes based on what is called a shared governance model. And that means that the various stakeholders have decision-making power in particular spheres. So that the sphere of fiscal responsibility resides with the Board of Trustees. The sphere of curricular decisions and the academic integrity and mission of the institution is vested with the faculty. The faculty, and in fact, in our board-approved governance document, the faculty has decision-making power that we lead on this and we make the ultimate decisions with regard to curricular and academic issues, and that the role of the upper-level administration is to facilitate the faculty in seeing through the academic mission of the institution. So what's happened over the course of the last year and a half has been that faculty's curricular and academic role has been usurped by the president and the board. So this is where the dissatisfaction lies. Whether there is a fiscal crisis or not, we honestly have not been provided with sufficient information to make that determination, nor will they allow an independent accountant to take a look and make that assessment for us and provide us with the information that we would need for that outside assessment. Even if, and I'm not convinced of this, even if the fiscal crisis is real, it does not mean that the board and the president can take over the role of the faculty in making these unilateral decisions about where the cuts would come from. So there's sort of nowhere to hide on this, you know, that even if the crisis is real, shared governance is, it's more important that shared governance is respected in these situations, so that if you absolutely have to cut programs and faculty, that it would be done so in a way that wouldn't imperil the academic mission of the institution, which is clearly being done right now. We also, which they have failed to recognize publicly, way back in the spring when we had already experienced staff cuts and benefit reductions, we as a faculty came together in an extraordinary faculty meeting and voted unanimously for a set of alternative cuts that wouldn't go to the academic portion of the institution, and we never received a response to those recommendations.
Now, the corporatization of St. Rose, in your opinion, has been going on for how long?
You know, that's a good question, and it's hard to date it. I think that we're seeing, you know, we talked about this last time, too, and I know other folks have come in and talked on your show about this issue and certainly about the student loan crisis that is being driven
right.
Also by this corporate model. So corporatization of higher education is happening across the nation, and it is happening at St. Rose. I think in some ways we were able to hold it at bay for a while more than some other institutions had, because our shared governance was actually something that was respected, that our decision that we as faculty didn't always agree with the administration, but we were firmly in control of the academic mission of the college and setting the curriculum and delivering the curriculum based on respect for tenure and academic freedom. Both of those things have been so enormously eroded. I mean, that's what the corporate model does. It comes in and it says faculty are now, instead of being in charge of the academic mission, they're to take orders from people with non-academic training from the top, particularly from boards of trustees. And those folks are all corporate people. They're on boards because they were able to give money to the institution and secure themselves these positions and put themselves in positions to make decisions for the rest of us and for our students who aren't going to benefit from this kind of corporate-based education that's based on job training as opposed to educating the entire individual and cultivating critical thought. So we don't want to shortchange our children. I mean, our students. We don't want to shortchange them at all. I was like, thinking about public schools, and when I said children, and I have children, three children in Albany Public Schools now, and I think about how wonderful their teachers are, but in many ways, how public education is shortchanging children as well through this corporate model. So what we're seeing in higher education is really a reflection of what's happening in the public schools as well, really being forcing this sort of top-down hierarchical decision-making that's not being made by people who have academic training and that are more interested in making a profit, getting a return on their investment, particularly if they are investors like board members in this case, and selling them selling students this notion that they're getting a job, that they're guaranteed a job in some way, and there's never any guarantee of that, and it's all the more reason to broadly and liberally educate everyone as opposed to training them for jobs.
You know, I've done a couple of shows on Common Core, and Common Core is kind of the standardized testing, and it inhibits, I believe, creative thinking and creativity. So this corporate model, you're saying, is also happening on the college level. So if creativity and, you know, thinking outside the box is inhibited in both the secondary schools and higher education, that's not saying much for the thinkers that will be coming out for the next generation. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And this is the longer term that we're thinking of. You know, we've tried to respond, you know, fully to these kinds of claims that our own college administrators are making about the decisions that they are compelled to make under the circumstances. And we keep responding by saying, no matter what the financial, you know, situation is, you are not compelled to make these decisions. These are uninformed decisions. These are decisions that are that we're not just unhappy about as faculty because we're losing our colleagues or we're losing some programs. We're saying this is going to be devastating for thinkers in the future, for the people who are going to go into society and hopefully transform things in a much more positive and egalitarian fashion. We are shortchanging folks, and creativity is one of the things that is being squashed in this case. And I must say, as a professor for the past 14 years, one of the things that I think serves students so well and is such a signal of whether or not they'll be successful in college and then after college as well, is whether or not they have a robust sense of intellectual curiosity. I mean, this is the thing that when I see that in a student, I know I've got them. Like they're gonna do well because they're animated by this. They want to know things, and wanting to know things generally leads to searching out some answers and some perspectives on these kinds of things. And this is the kind of thing that that you get so well. This is what you get in spades with the liberal arts, and this is the thing that's under assault at the College of St. Rose. This is where a good chunk of the cuts were made. We're in the School of Arts and Humanities, and across the board. I mean, there were major cuts also to the School of Education, which is also devastating. We want to produce more teachers, and we have produced these teachers at the College of St. Rose that go on to inspire their students to be so very creative. But you know, these are the areas where the cuts were made, and this is what we're saying. It's not that we're just individually upset or personally upset. This is a devastating set of circumstances and decisions being made at the college that are going to affect generations to come unless we can roll them back.
You know, this is a pretty frightening scenario, because if people are not trained to think critically, then eventually whatever is presented to a person is something that they're going to say, oh, okay, that's right. So there's going to be no questioning, no, you know, thinking about the specific issue and coming to their own, a person's own conclusions. Realistically speaking, how do you feel future generations, if this is allowed to accelerate?
Yeah, so I think that extrapolating out from our own set of circumstances, you know, the what's happening is like at our college, as upsetting and disturbing as it is for us as well as for the Capital District, it's also not unique, and I think a lot of people are actually paying attention on the national stage. We've been contacted by lots of other folks at other institutions who are experiencing something similar, and they know that we've had a little bit of success at pushing back. And so they're contacting us saying, this thing is happening with us too. What can we do, you know, in order to resist? And so I think we've had a lot. I must really stress how much support we've had from students on campus who have been such great allies to us and are also fighting for their own, the quality of their own educations. And they're sort of coming up with a playbook right now to share with other students and faculty and staff at other institutions that are going through something similar for how they might attempt to resist these kinds of things happening at their own institutions, and if they do happen, what they can do in response. So we're hoping that this sort of has a ripple effect to assert faculty control over the curriculum for the sake of the learning of future generations. And one way I just should mention for those folks who are listening right now, the next big event that we have in terms of this resistance is some folks may know that tomorrow afternoon, the Albany Business Review is giving out a new set of awards that they call the Disruptor Awards. And disruption is a new catchphrase in the corporate world that kind of makes the case that disruption is the new thing that folks are supposed to do, that it's the disruptors are the ones that don't listen to conventional wisdom and are innovative, and they're trying new things in business that are paying off. Our president, Dr. Carolyn Stefanko, is being honored as one of these disruptors. So there will be a demonstration outside of the Renaissance Hotel at the corner of State and Eagle tomorrow afternoon, starting at 11 o'clock in the morning, to demonstrate against this award. It's sort of really shocking to us and dismaying and disappointing that our president would accept an award for firing people, in essence, and for destroying the academic mission of the institution. So we hope that folks will come out and really support us. Lots of local labor will be there as well, and we're hoping that maybe this will also provide some pressure.
So if everything goes as it has been going, what do you see? What does your crystal ball show for the future of America?
Oh, that's a tall order. I don't know. But what I'll say is that I think sometimes people ask me, why do you, you know, and not just me, there's lots of us. I'm speaking for, you know, a whole lot of faculty and students who have bravely faced down, you know, the institution of power in this case. And I think, you know, people ask us many times, you know, isn't this just an unwinnable battle, and why do you continue to do these things? Because, you know, nobody has to listen to you, and they oftentimes don't listen to you. And I think we keep doing these kinds of things because we see not only do we love our home institution, we love the College of St. Rose, we've invested our lives in many cases for many, you know, many decades to that institution, and we don't want to see it diminished. But we are also doing this, again, with an eye towards the larger implications, that this is not just happening to our institution. It's happening in lots of different places and across the nation. And if we don't fight against this, if we don't really resist this kind of corporate takeover of higher education, then we are going to continue to produce folks that don't think of themselves as citizens, that don't think of themselves as having responsibilities to other people, that don't that aren't able to assess credible information from non-credible information. You know, you can't say that you live in a democracy anymore if you don't have informed citizens that can do these things. And informed citizenry is a key requirement of a democratic and free society. So I think that the implications and the possibilities could be very dark and very dire indeed if we don't resist this kind of rolling tide of corporate takeover.
The information that you've been providing today, as well as the interviews that I've had about the student loan debt crisis, it is a really frightening thought because young people are becoming more indebted at the same time the college curriculums aren't as good as they should be. Do you agree with that?
I do. It's the worst kind of double whammy that you are leaving college saddled with a ridiculous amount of debt, which hinders your ability to, you know, achieve anything like the American dream. I ask my students in my classes whether or not they think they'll ever own a house, and they just laugh at me, you know. I mean, they find this absolutely preposterous. They have no expectation that this or you know, notion that this would ever happen. They come out of college hobbled with the debt in exchange for an education that might not be worth the kind of debt that they've incurred. So these curricular issues are really, they're really important. It's really, there's a reason why we keep coming back and talking about shared governance and why, you know, that is really a larger concept for talking about the importance of making sure that those who have the expertise to make these decisions, those with the academic expertise, are making the academic decision-making on campuses. Once it gets out of the hands of the people with the academic expertise, that's when you see everything go downhill in a hurry.
Angela, thank you for coming on Focus on Albany. And I'm sure in the future you will have plenty to share with our listening audience about what's going on at St. Rose. So you've been listening to Professor Angela Ledford, and this is Focus on Albany, and if you like this show or you have a comment about this show, go on Twitter, hashtag Focus on Albany, and share your thoughts. Angela, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.